Welcome to your daily dose of Bob and Nick. My buddy Nick and I are both wordsmiths and storytellers. We love words, we love stories, and creativity in general. So today's episode is kind of a gift to ourselves because we talk about all of that. And as a special bonus, I think you'll really enjoy Nick's response when I challenge his spontaneous acronym identifying skills. I'm not saying it's a useful talent, I'm just saying it's one of Nick's gifts, and it's pretty entertaining. Check it out. What is the English word that has the most uses and definitions? They call them senses, right? When you have a different definition for the same word, what English word has the most?
Catastrophe. No, not really. Carn, fan, gang, gen, wander.
I'll give you a hint.
Care.
It's a three-letter word.
And.
You would think, but give me more than one definition of and.
Also.
Well, that's a synonym. But it was quick, so you get a point for that. Okay.
Bar.
Bar.
I think bar
is a good. Yeah.
Bar you from coming in here.
Bar association.
Yeah. I know. What is it?
Set. S-E-T. The word set. Yeah. I don't even know how I came by this information, but 430 different uses and definitions for set.
Well, that's crazy.
You have a set, more, this, set this down.
We need more words. I think is what I'm hearing.
I think.
Are there any other languages that have that many definitions for one word?
Does Inuits have like a bunch of, no, they have a bunch of different words for snow.
For snow, yeah.
But snow doesn't have 100 different meanings.
Correct.
So no, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know why that's even valuable, but I like knowing that.
I need more words.
Yeah, I don't think you need more words.
I need more words.
I think you use more than your proportion of words in the
Do
world,
I?
My friend.
That's
if
good.
There are finite words, then the rest of the world is looking at you going, he's consuming some of my words.
He's making up some words.
Why don't we just do that?
I do.
We can. Guess what? People make up words all the time and they end up in the dictionary. Why? Because they get used.
Yeah.
Okay? So all I'm suggesting is we got to be patient.
The dictionary is not a rule book.
Well, you know something? People treat it like that, though.
Yeah.
When they say, oh, that's not a word, and then they're going to go and they're going to look it up, right? So they make some rules. I don't know what the rules are exactly, but I know this. A lot of slang words that I used that weren't once in the dictionary are now in the dictionary, like the word kinda, K-I-N-D-A. That wasn't a word back in the 1970s in the dictionary. It's in the dictionary now, and they'll tell you that it means
killed in non-disclosure agreement.
Killed. Wow. That was fast.
What?
Killed in non-disclosure agreement.
Well, it's KIA and NDA. So
okay.
Yeah.
So what would FACTA be?
FACTA?
FACTA.
F-A-C-T-A?
F-A-C-T-A.
Fiction as continental tectonic action.
Honestly, I could do this all day because I see you spin. And the thing is this. You spin faster than most people because I'm in a world of people who spin at Sac Harmony
Lab.
Oh,
yeah.
But the thing is this. With this kind of a thing, I think that you don't really have a rival because your brain tosses those words out, and if it has any possibility of fitting in, you say it.
It just fits, yeah.
And then it almost sounds like you just spit that out.
Well, I think that's the thing. Like, even if I took a pause, I still say it with such surety.
Yes, and I think that is the key.
Yeah.
Surety.
Surety.
For sure. Ready. And also, and this is a little technique that we also do at Sac Comedy Lab from time to time, you repeat the question while your brain is starting to assemble everything. And it's like, that just buys us time. I always say that when we're playing the game categories. I coach my level one students. I'm like, when I turn around and I repeat what the audience has just said to you, and then I look at the audience to confirm that this is what was just said to everybody, I'm buying you time to start scrolling. And you better start scrolling, because if you only have one thing in your head, I guarantee you the person before you is going to say it. And then boom.
Did you ever read like an old version, like as close to the spoken word version of like Beowulf and some of the stories that were always handed down before they were written?
I have. Is there a segment of that called Grendel?
Yeah, Grendel's a character.
Okay,
I think,
because I remember reading about Grendel, but I don't think I read the whole classic.
So I remember just when I was a kid, I read one of the versions, and it was, and you know, a lot of this would happen. And I think this was a way for the storyteller, again, who's doing this from memory, to help them either remember things or to give them a second to figure out what happens next. And Grendel looked down at the path and he decided he was going to go down that path around the farmhouse. And Grendel walked down the path around the farmhouse. And at the end of the path around the, and then they would say the next thing. So I think that was, yeah, it's kind of the same thing.
That's more elegant, I think, though. Yeah. I kind of like that as a, as a mechanism, you know, to be able to tell the story, keep the story flowing.
Yep.
And if you have the right energy behind it, the redundancy isn't going to bother you too much.
Oh, no, not at all.
Right? Because yep. One of the things that I found about storytelling in general is the audience is going to be about as interested in the story as the storyteller is. So if, you know,
just pointed at you. Yeah, to I like emphasize that. So I should put in a,
it's true.
Sound effect.
Well, don't you write to entertain yourself, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Like when you write stories for the community paper, you have to feel the rhythm and the energy of the story before you're going to hand it to your editor and say, yeah, hey, this is what I want to
print. Always thinking of the segues. How does this connect to that? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you look at the whole thing and you're like, is this a beginning, a middle, and an end? And do I like it? Because this is the other thing. I'm so tired of people who create who are too afraid to say they like what they've created. I'm like, we had Kelly Joy Ladd on, and I love to hear her talking about how much she loves the art that she creates once it's created, because she can see what she intended in real life, you know? But there are a lot of artists that just, they feel like that's too much. I'm loving myself too much. People are going to think that I have a big ego, and it's like, love yourself.
Well, I guess it depends if you create something and you're like, well, man, I love this so much, I can't possibly get rid of it. I'm going to put it up in my house. I'm going to have it enlarged and put it outside my house as my roof. I like that idea, actually.
I like that idea, too. There's so many of these.
Artistic roofs.
So many of these. I'm not even, you know, you just hit on something, roofs. Right? It's like all you have to do now is impixelate the colors of the shingles,
yeah,
and you could literally do portraits on your roofs. Yeah. That's such a brilliant, simple, funny something. And I think, here's the thing. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, okay.
There was a second there when you spit that out, like you could decorative roofs and artistic roofs, and you thought to yourself, that is actually kind of a good idea. Yep. Okay.
Good.
But I feel that way about so many of the ideas that you've just casually spit out during this podcast and throughout my relationship with you, that it's just like, that's cool something. You could 3D imagine print stuff, yeah, to show people, yeah, yeah, what that would look like. And it was like, why wouldn't you? I want a portrait of Buddy Holly on my roof. You know, you had to check with the homeowners association.
Yeah.
But guess what? Welcome to Rock and Roll Neighborhood, where every house has the portrait of a famous.
I would 100% bet that the neighborhood association, the homeowners association, never thought of that. Because no one's ever done that before.
Right. Well, the other side is this. Just do it on the back of your house.
Yeah.
Into the backyard.
Hey, it's me. I'm Nick. Thanks for listening. Are roofs with photorealistic pictures a good idea? That's really up to the free market to decide, but I think you can agree it's a great idea. If you'd like to pre-order yours, go to thisroofisfire.com. The site isn't up yet, but it will be by the time this episode comes out. If it's not, just Venmo me your deposit and we'll get started right away. Any picture you want. Anything. Maybe not anything. We'll decide. Just send me a picture and we'll put it on your roof. In some way. $10,000. Have a great day.